Thank you for tuning in to the Astrological Commission podcast. I'm your host, Issachar Bey, and I'm here with what I call the master astrologer, Sharon Knight. We're going to talk with her and really dive into the life of this great astrologer. She's somebody who I've was introduced to a few years ago, and her intellect, her knowledge of astrology, I was fascinated by. I had an opportunity to go to the Astrological Association of London last year, and I thought I was going to meet her, but she wasn't present. But we're here on this interview, so we're gonna dive into learn about this great astrologer. And also, we're going to talk about some things that concerning the future, what's going on right now, what she has coming up. And then hopefully, those of you that are listening, you'll be able to contact her, maybe join her email list if you wanted to schedule a reading, maybe sign up for some of her classes that she has. So these are some of the things that we're looking forward to. Here at the Astrological Commission podcast, we want to expand astrology to the fullest. We want to celebrate astrology, and we want to recognize those astrologers who are doing excellent work. So, Sharon Knight, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm deeply honored and flattered by your introduction, and I am just a normal person. And it's great to be on with you. I mean, it's, you know, I follow you on Facebook, but to actually talk in person is wonderful. And like you, I was sorry to have missed the AA conference last year, but, you know, and actually get to see people, because that's the great thing with the conferences, that you can meet up with people from across the pond or from Europe, people that we only see on social media. So yeah, I'm sorry too that I missed actually meeting you in the flesh.
Yeah, definitely. I'm pretty sure that we'll meet pretty soon. So Miss Knight, tell us about your early childhood, and also how were you introduced into astrology?
Well, let's start off with my chart. I'm Sagittarius rising, Saturn in the first house, and I have Jupiter the Greater Benefic in the 11th sign of Libra, and he's in sextile aspect with Saturn. So straight away, you know that I have a charmed life, I say. I had a wonderful, wonderful childhood with parents who were very much in love, polar opposites to one another. Mum was a Gemini, Dad was a Sagittarius. Dad was Gemini rising, Mum was Sagittarius rising, and then I had my very much adored younger sister, who was completely different to me. She was really pretty, and just one of the loveliest people I had the good fortune to know. So I grew up, it was a very middle-class upbringing. My sister and I went to convent, to a private school, and so I was blessed with having a good education. But I think more than that, both parents were travellers, and they taught us to explore not only the world, but also books, and to expand our mind horizons. And when I think I was 16, and I can't remember if it was my birthday or the Christmas of that year, but I was in my Christmas stocking or my birthday package, there was a book, Linda Goodman's Sun Signs, and I devoured it. And I thought that was astrology. I learned it off by heart. And indeed, fast forward, you know, some years later, I think I was like 23 when I went to Texas to open up an office for a factory that made computer peripherals in Torrance in LA. So I used to commute between Texas and California. And I don't think I'd bought a meal or drink in all the time I was there, because going to a bar, A, being English, people would say, go on, you know, say something, you're English. But also with the men, and of course I was only interested in the men, I could tell them their sun sign. And everyone was sort of intrigued. So it was a great fun time. And then I came back to the UK, and then I was working for somebody from the Middle East. And this was at the time of the Iran crisis, I think. I think this was 85. And Ollie North was in the papers at the time. And because of the security that was around in those years around Middle Eastern people, I was living in a house in Belgravia, and the housekeeper said, could she have somebody come to the house to do her tarot cards? And the housekeeper was Italian, and she didn't want her husband knowing. Her husband was the chauffeur. So I said, yeah. I said, by any chance, does she speak English? And she said, oh, yes. So this person came to the house. And, I mean, very obviously she knew who I worked for. But what nobody knew, despite high security, was the fact that I was moonlighting in another job. And she said, well, you're working for someone in the property business. And she told me other stuff. And I thought, how? How can you know this about me? Nobody knows this about me. And she described my upbringing. And again, there was no way. And then Mina, bless her heart, she said, you're going to be an astrologer. And the next day she came around with a load of astrology books for me. That was the, I think, the Walt Whitman books. And so I started studying, because up until then, I hadn't realized that there was more than the sun sign. And of course, once I started, I was hooked. I was lost to the rest of the world. And in those days, I was living in London, and we had something called adult education classes, which you went to in the evenings. And they were quite reasonable. And there was astrology classes. So, and I then discovered something called the Astrological Lodge. So on a Monday night, I went to the lodge and listened to the talks and got to meet many people with whom I'm still friends with. This is what, 35, 40 years later, I'm still friends with them, thank goodness. And then I was going to Mike Edwards' class on a regular basis. Now, Mike Edwards also taught John Frawley, who is famous or infamous, depending on your take. At the same, John and I started with Mike and Olivia Barclay at the same time, but I'll come on to Olivia in a minute. And then also Bernard Eccles, and then the Company of Astrologers with Maggie and Geoffrey Cornelius. So I was in a fortunate position that I could just absorb and absorb. Now, where I got lucky, or how my life sort of became different to most astrologers in the UK, is that initially I was studying with the Faculty of Astrology, and I got my intermediate diploma. They did an intermediate diploma in those days, so that was 1990, I think. But Mike Edwards was a classicist, and he read Bonatti in the Latin. And also, because of his friendship with Olivia, he was au fait with Lily. And so he taught what is now loosely called traditional astrology, but of course traditional astrology has been hijacked in the main by many really good astrologers who mix both modern and traditional. So in those days, I was learning from Mike, and I was learning Bonatti and Lily. And then I was on my diploma course. I just had the last, I think, 4 months to do the diploma course. And I went to the summer school, which is famous. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. it was a lovely week in Oxford in England, in the colleges there. And just prior to going, I'd had one of my papers back from my tutor for the faculty with red lines all through it, saying, we do not predict, you do not make statements like this. And I thought, well, what is astrology if it's not predicting or forecasting for somebody to say, you know, next month, take an umbrella with you everywhere you go because it's going to rain hard, even though it's summer. So no, that wasn't allowed. And I was really, I thought, well, this isn't for me then, if you can't make predictions. And I was chatting to a marvelous man called Ron Gwynn, who used to teach for the faculty, and he taught astronomy. And I said to Ron, I don't think this is for me. I thought astrology was all about predicting, and apparently you're not allowed to predict. And I can still see it. We were sitting on this bench, and he patted my hand and said, Sharon, my dear, you need Olivia. Here's her number. Give her a call. So the very next, as soon as I got home, I rang Olivia straight away. And she said, well, come down, because she lived in Kent, which is about 70, 80 miles away from London. So I went down to meet Olivia, and she agreed to take me on. So that was that. And I was exceedingly fortunate to study personally with Olivia and stay with her. And then during her last illness, I spent a fair bit of time with her, taking her to hospital for her treatments. And I always remember her car was a white car. I can't remember the make, but her number plate was Joker. And she was a joker. She was a force to be reckoned with. And then I had the great good fortune to meet Rob Zoller when he came over. Oh, just backtracking to Olivia. I was tutoring on the QHP. And Olivia said, she was nothing if not subtle. She said, Sharon, if you want to remain as a tutor, you have to support this new project coming out of America, RHAT, with the three R's. And so I've got all these blue and buff-coloured little pamphlets from Project Hindsight. And so I kind of really then started to get into traditional astrology, the proper, you know, let's call it classical astrology. And then, as I say, when Rob Zoller came over, I met him and then started studying with him. And although I passed his course, the course that I did between 96 and 98 bore very little resemblance to the course that Ben Dykes and Stephen Birchfield completed in 2002. I mean, he'd expanded it and it truly was a terrific course, but it wasn't as complete when I did it with the 2 years with him. So that's kind of my background. And then Ben Dykes came over to the UK. And up until then, although I wasn't referencing the outer planets, I still had them in my charts. And Ben said, take them out. You don't use them. It's clutter. So I took a deep swallow. And he said, and use whole sign houses. Well, that for me was really hard to use whole sign houses, because in a quadrant-based system, my sun was in the fourth, and I liked having an angular sun. In a whole sign system, my sun was in the fifth. And it was only in recent years, I guess, that I came to realize that actually I truly am a fifth house sun. I'm not a fourth house sun. And the fifth house sun was a good indication for my father, because he was a wonderful, wonderful man, such a kind man, such a lovely man, a brilliant, very gifted musician. And in fact, in the UK, there was the Red Book of Jazz Greats, and Dad is actually mentioned in it. So I was very proud of my father and very fortunate to have him and Mum. So that's kind of a whistle-stop tour through my astrological background. Any questions?
This is wonderful, because I've said this to you already, but you can listen to my introduction into astrology, and at a young age, I was introduced into Project Hindsight with Robert Schmidt. I was introduced into John Farley, Deborah Holding, Lee Lehman, Olivia Barkley, Bernadette Brady. These are some of the astrologers who my teacher was giving me these books. And so what was amazing to me was, like I said, last year when we went to the Astrological Association conference, I was able to meet some of these people who I had knew for years. And just to hear you talk about, you know, Olivia Barkley, Project Hindsight, the traditional, getting into traditional, and also that seems to be a big issue as with whole signs in the quadrant-based houses, basically or Reggio Montanus or, you know, Placidus or you know, whatever house you choose, going into the whole sign houses. So that really seems to be, as we know, a big issue now in our astrology now. Seems to be everybody's either on that one side of the fence or the other. But I also wanted to know, so after you, you know, were able to take the courses from Robert Zoller and begin to, after you took those classes, did you move into being a professional astrologer, or were you just, like, you know, were you still, like, doing, like, maybe friends, family, stuff like that?
Well, I'm Saturn in the first house. I like formula. I like formats. And I felt before I could actually start work as a professional astrologer and charge, I needed to have a diploma to show that I was competent. So it was only really when I got my QHP from Olivia, which I think was, as I say, 91, I can't really remember now. It's all such a long time ago. But it was only then that I started as a professional astrologer. But again, where I was lucky, the wonderful, wonderful Barbara Dunn, to whom Olivia left the course when she died. Barbara was a well-known magazine astrologer. And Barbara was asked about doing another job for another magazine, and she said no, but she recommended me. And so I started working as a magazine astrologer. The magazine's now defunct. And so that really was when I actually began to view myself as a professional astrologer. And at the same time, I joined the newly formed APAI, which is the Association of Professional Astrologers. It's now called International. In those days, it was just the Association of Professional Astrologers. And that was started by Mike Harding, Pat Kirby, Mavis Klein, Lindsay Rademacher, and a few others. And they basically were all from the faculty. But at the time, there was issues with the EU and the church and astrology. So they felt that if they set up a professional organization and had members who were accredited, that would somehow protect astrology if it came to issues with legislation. And so I joined the APAI, I think within 6 months, 9 months of it being formed. And that is still going. We've got, I don't know, about 170 members globally. So that was when I started to actually consider myself as a professional astrologer. So I've been working probably 30 years as a professional, but I look back, and in fact I was with one of my students this morning, and she was saying how she's 25 and she was doing a chart for someone in their 40s and she felt uncomfortable. And I said to her, well, I did chart for charts of people much older when I was in my 20s. And I look back and think, how did I have the gall? But of course, I had the astrology. So although I didn't have life experience, I actually had astrological knowledge that kind of kept me on the straight and narrow and kept people coming back. And that's what I said with this student. Providing she sticks to the astrology, she won't go wrong. So, yeah, so but it is my sole source of income and has been for quite a few years.
So I know that, you know, at this time you're doing astrology and you are, you know, you're calling out the names of everybody who I consider to be the greats, and you studied, and now you've become one of them. And then I noticed that you, at some point in your life, you fell ill.
Oh, yes, that was rather a nuisance, yeah.
And what happened yes. with that?
Well, I mean, I've had two different types of breast cancer. The last one was 10 years ago, and that had metastasized into my body, into my spine, my liver, and I was given 3 to 6 months to live. But I said to the consultant, keep me alive until the 5th of December, and I'll make it. I will not die. And that was using solar arcs. That was waiting for my son to get off the fixed star Shiat and into, the ascendant, and into Aries. I think it was, I can't remember what it was. Yeah, but it was Mars. That's right, it was my Mars. Because Mars is in Aquarius, and so by that time, he got into 0 degrees Aries, and here I am, you know, 10 years on, when I shouldn't have been here, but it was my belief in astrology and herbalism, and fantastic herbalist I had, that kept me going against all odds. So I think a lot of illness or susceptibility to illness is called through the mind. And although, as I say, I've had a fantastic life, a wonderful life, the one thing that caused me emotional damage was not being able to have children. My body couldn't hold them. I mean, today it would be different. But I had always grown up thinking I'd have a family, you know, to replicate what I grew up in, but with perhaps more horses, more land. And that didn't happen. And then my husband, we were just about to embark on fertility stuff when my husband died. So I had a lot of emotional background to trigger the cancer, but I decided I wanted to live and have fun and learn more astrology than die. So here I am.
Yes, yes, here you are. And I think that's amazing that, you know, in that time of crisis, you are able to step to the plate and not only embrace astrology, but then also embrace herbalism, where you were able to study the herbs, of which herbs to take, which herbs were good for what. And then, of course, with astrology, you were able to use that for, you know, maybe the right times to do things, the right times not to do things, electional charts, looking at the decumbenture chart. I mean, all those different things that you were able to use to get you back into the place now where, like you said, you're here now. You are able to overcome that major crisis. And I think that that's a phenomenal testimony of being able to use this science that we learned and begin to use it to the best of our ability. What greater way to emphasize or to promote astrology than to know that it works for me. So I know it works. And I know it works. I know that I can go out and do readings and teach and tell people about it, because I have it. It's proven me well on a personal level. So I just think that that's phenomenal. After that, you are now doing astrology. What do you consider yourself, or what is your main scope of astrology? Are you just traditional, classical? Are you mundane? Like, what would be considered your genre?
Well, I am strictly, let's call it classical. So I only use the seven planets and the lots or the parts. I do not use the outer planets. I think they are so generational, obviously, with their long cycles. So that's where I differ from the majority of astrologers in the UK, that I do not use the outer planets. And in fact, there's only myself, Sue Ward, another of Olivia Barclay's great student teachers, and of course, Barbara. We are the only three, to my knowledge, in the UK as professional astrologers who do not use the outers. So, yeah, so call me a classical astrologer or just an astrologer, because that was the original astrology. And I've had the charges leveled at me that I'm a fundamentalist, but I'm not. I just find less is more. You can see, it's very easy to see in a chart and to actually know your astronomical cycles as to how to predict easily times of plenty and times of famine for your clients. So I work as a consulting astrologer. So I do electional, I do natal, and all that that encompasses. But then my hobby, which I don't get paid for, sadly, is mundane. I love mundane. I love watching the cycles. But again, I use the traditional planets. So you look at the conjunctions of Jupiter and Saturn, Saturn and Mars, and you look at the eclipse cycles and the Mars cycle. You know, a lot of people don't know that actually Mars has a 79-year cycle. They think it has a two-year cycle, end of. And then I teach now, and I don't teach in the UK. Well, I've got my own course, but I teach mostly abroad. I'm welcomed as a teacher abroad, and I am asked to teach just traditional astrology, which is great to, you know, be appreciated for what I do. So I'm teaching shortly for a Greek school. That will be a four-week course on perfections for Vassia. I teach for the wonderful Onodasha school in Turkey and Rod Chang in Taiwan.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, so I am very lucky. And then, yeah, that's it. I wouldn't say I'm 50% teaching, 50% natal. I think I'm probably more natal and everything around natal. I'm probably 65-70% natal work, and then teaching, as I say, for these schools. So I'll be teaching a course on horary, I think in the autumn, 10-week course for owner's school.
That's great.
Yeah, so I just love it. I mean, what a fantastic life that you meet such wonderful people and across continents or land masses where you wouldn't normally go. I mean, you must find the same thing.
So when you say you only use the seven planets, do you incorporate the fixed stars, the androids?
I incorporate the fixed stars. And let's tackle the thorny issue of the house systems. Initially, I teach my students, and I work with my natal chart using whole sign houses, but I also use Alcibiades because you need to see, and this is Ben Dyke's teaching. I'm, in fact, even though I've got a few years of astrology under my belt, I am studying on Ben Dyke's traditional course because there are nuances that I have missed or I've become blind to. So, and as Ben says, if you use a quadrant-based system, you can see if a planet is advancing or withdrawing, particularly towards angularity. So I do incorporate quadrant houses, and in the second part of my course, I teach my students, again, to use quadrant and whole sign houses, because it does give you a slightly different interpretation, a slightly different viewpoint, and it stops being too dogmatic, I guess. But I don't use the asteroids, and I don't use the outer planets at all. I use the parts, the fixed stars, and planets, the seven naked eye planets. That's it.
And when you're doing client work or even personal work, and you're getting into predictions, I heard that you're doing a class of perfections. When you get to prediction, what prediction tool do you find to be very accurate? Is it solar returns? Is it perfections? Solar rocks? What do you find to be very accurate to you in your course of study and practice?
Well, using solar returns and perfections together, because the natal chart is static at the time we're born, but of course we evolve and grow, and the solar return for the year sets the scene for that year. And using the perfections and blending the perfections and the solar return, it really highlights the area of life or the people in your life that will be prominent during that year or the next year, whatever. So, yeah, so that's solar arcs are terrific. And of course, Frank Clifford, one of the better known English astrologers, he's written a book on solar arcs. I haven't got it, but I understand from a lot of people that he really sets it out very clearly how to use solar arcs. So, as I say, it was knowing my solar arc of my Mars coming off the fixed star Shiat, the drowning star. And if you think Cancer is sort of wet and cold, into my Mars moving into areas where he's at home, hot and dry, and it dried out the Cancer. So, yeah, so solar arcs, I don't overlook them. And I also use directing through the bounds, but this is more nitty-gritty stuff. Primary directions I do use as well, but my main go-to and the main things I teach, you know, if I'm doing workshops, are perfections and solar returns, because they're so easy. They're so easy for everybody. Yeah. And so, you don't need a computer.
Yes. Just recently, over the years, I guess Ben Dykes put out this book on Abu Mishal with the Solar Revolutions, the big green thick book. And I ended up purchasing it. And it's a very, very thick, but it's a good read. It's I like the way he lays everything out. And he incorporates from Abu Mishal the perfections incorporated with the solar return. So when you would find the perfection for the year, look at the Lord of the house of the perfection, of the perfected house, and then you would incorporate that Lord to find out where it's at in the solar return chart?
Yeah, so I would look at where the actual sign falls in the solar return chart and the sign of the ascendant of the solar return chart in the perfected chart.
Oh, okay.
So I consider all three charts. So they're like sort of the cogs in a clock, in an old-fashioned clock. You know, they're all ticking round with each other, and you want to see when the hands line up. But yes, now what I will say with Ben, I mean, I adore Ben. He is a god in my eyes. But what I tell everyone, when you read his books, when you get his books, read, reread, and reread again the introductions before you go on to the actual book, because Ben sets everything out so clearly and concisely and tells you what to look for
Yes. Yeah, he does. And so now in your prediction work, when you are working with the perfections, with the total return, do you include the lots and parts in that as well?
Yeah, I do perfect the lot of fortune. And again, it depends what the client's coming to you for as to what you're actually looking at,
mm-hmm.
because that will change the focus of the chart. You know, if you looked at absolutely everything, you'd be there for a month of Sundays and a bit
yeah.
more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about keeping things simple and not losing sight of what the client wants from you, what the client expects from the reading, how you can help the client go forward within their life and to make the most of any opportunity that will arise during the year.
Exactly. Have you done any readings or consultations with any celebrities or primarily any of the royals or any dignities or anything like that?
Now, yes, but you can't say who, of course.
Yeah, I know you can't say who, of course.
Yes, I have, and for foreign royalty as well. So, yeah, I've been extraordinarily blessed.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's magnificent. That's why I asked the question, because I figured that somebody of your caliber, at some point, the light being shined on you, you would begin to magnetize or bring in those people, you know, that you would be able to consult, and they would have you as a consultant. So now I want to ask you a little bit about mundane, because I myself love mundane, but I'm still a novice. And I, you know, love your articles and your videos and different things about mundane. And I know the big thing that everybody argues about is in the ingress chart, if it's cardinal, fixed, immutable, you know, there's certain steps or certain rules. Some people don't believe that. They say, well, I don't care if it's cardinal or fixed or if it's mutable or whatever the case may be. Some people, you know, believe things differently. But what I wanted to ask you is, do your experience through your study and research of using mundane, seeing all of these events that have taken place over the years, what are some of the techniques or what are some of the things you look for when you're doing a mundane chart?
Well, I start off with the Aries ingress, but you've got to put it into context. So you've got to use the Aries ingress against the chart of a country. And this is where issues arise, in my opinion. So like for America, you've got so many different charts for America. So I use the Aries ingress of 1776 because that's indisputable. And from that, I use that as the base chart if I'm looking at American mundane matters. With the UK, of course, we have two charts. We have the 1066 and we have the 1801. And there are other charts. But if you start off always with the Aries ingress, then that's a good place to give you indications as to how the year for the country may play out. But of course, you have to understand that it's not just the Aries ingress. It's not just the... You need to keep in mind the Mars-Saturn conjunction chart in Cancer and then the last conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn chart. Well, we know, you know, that's ingrained in all of us today, isn't it? 0 degrees Aquarius. If you're using actual, if you're using the traditional method of the, the mean conjunctions, then it's a slightly different chart. And I've had long discussions with both Ben and Stephen Birchfield about whether or not we use the actual conjunction or the mean conjunction. And I'm afraid those two men who I look up to have convinced me really that it's the mean conjunction of Jupiter-Saturn cycle and the mutations into the new elements that are important. And indeed, if you read, I've got the Brill edition of Abu Mishar on historical astrology, the Book of Religions and Dynasties, and it's subtitled On the Great Conjunctions. And that was translated by Yamamoto and the wonderful Charles Burnett. So, and that really is quite a heavy book in every sense of the word. But they use the Ming conjunctions there. So, yes, it's, but it's not so, although I class myself as a classical astrologer, I am open to innovation. Indeed, Lily was open to innovation. When he talks about using the minor aspects, not the Ptolemaic aspects, he said that Kepler used them, so try them out. And there are, I think, a couple of instances where he uses a semi-sextile in Christian astrology. But the reason Kepler came up with the minor aspects was because he didn't want to use houses. He didn't think the rationale for houses was correct.
Yeah. So, in your studies and research, what are some of the most profound things you've seen when you've gotten into mundane? I mean, being able to look at the chart and see an event maybe before it happened, or to look at an event as it's happening. What are some of the most profound things you just off the top of your head that you maybe have witnessed or discovered in a mundane chart?
Well, of course, in mundane, I mean, not only do you use the... Let's just backtrack a bit before I answer that. When you're doing the Aries ingress, as you've already alluded to, there are certain rules as to how many charts you do. But you do the solar ingress every month, and you look at the lunations and you look at the eclipses. So when I was looking at this forthcoming Aries ingress, and obviously it contains this eclipse on the sun's exaltation degree at 19 Aries, and I knew that it was going to affect our royal family. And so I started writing the Aries Ingress for the APSI newsletter. Ashwin in India is our amazing editor, but we have to get everything in quite early. So I started writing this in January, before it was announced about King Charles' prostate and the Princess of Wales' health issue. And I said the royal family are going to be in the news a lot, and I thought that you see, it's actually very difficult because I get chastised for making predictions, and of course, it's a minefield about making predictions about any named person. So you can't, especially here in the UK. I'd be drummed out of astrology if I were to name anyone. So you have to be fairly bland about your predictions. But as my friends will tell you, last year I was talking about this and talking about issues around the royal family, that there was going to be some news very early on in this year. And of course we had the two major health issues. But Ashwin said when he went back through all the articles I'd written for the AI newsletter, and as I say, my predictions have to be very, very bland because people get offended. And he said that I had like a 70% hit rate over the many years I've written the mundane ingresses for the quarterlies. So, yeah, so this most recent one, obviously, is in my mind because the king and his daughter-in-law are still going through these health issues.
Yes, yes. What were some of your discoveries or maybe your concerns about anything happening in the year 2024? Did you see anything significant that maybe alarmed you, or maybe that you got your eye on that you're like, I'm going to keep my eye on this? This looks like something could develop here.
Yes, well, of course, Jupiter changes signs. I think August there was something, and May. Obviously, April would be eclipsed, that goes without saying. And then there was something in May, I can't remember offhand, and August, and then in the autumn, and then, of course, when Saturn stations direct, I think stations direct at the end of the year, I can't remember, in December. No, it's Mars goes retrograde, doesn't it, at the end of the year. And he's retrograde in Leo. So, again, I've got my eye on events around there. But, yeah, just going back to the predictions I made successfully and got some money on was the Brexit. And I predicted that Cameron would retain leadership when there was an election. And in 2016, of course, I was one of the few astrologers who predicted Trump. But I qualify that by saying that I had predicted Trump would retain the president, when, of course, he didn't. And I haven't actually looked at the charts for the American election yet. I've been busy with other things. I got that one 100% wrong. But and interesting enough, so did other traditional astrologers. We converged and compared notes, and we had all thought or ascertained astrologically that Trump would retain the crown, and he didn't. They're just a few immediate predictions that spring to mind. As I said, I got it wrong.
Yes, yes. Tell us just real quickly, just before, just tell us about once again how our listeners can contact you. How can they sign up for your courses, your classes? And also, if anybody's listening from, because we're going to promote this all over, so anybody's listening overseas or abroad, is there still opportunities that they may be able to sign up for maybe any one of your classes overseas?
Oh, yes. I have my own course. So to find me, it's very easy. It's astrologersharon.co.uk. My email is astrologersharon@aol.com. Really simple. Just look for Astrologer Sharon and you'll find me. And I can be contacted through the website, of course. Now, the course I teach is a 2-year course, and it's on traditional natal astrology, and it's personal tuition. So you can sign up anytime. And how I teach is that there's a number of modules, and after each lesson, so each module will have perhaps 3 lessons in it, and after each lesson, we have a Zoom. And we go through the answers and we go through different issues that may arise. And if the students have a problem or they're not understanding something, then we have a Zoom. So it really is personal one-on-one tuition, because I do have a lot of knowledge, and there is going to be a day when I die or lose my marbles, and I need to pass on my teachers' teaching, because after all, we all stand on the shoulders of one another. You know, people who try and take control of, say, Gabri or Lily and say, well, you cannot use this material, it's mine. But we all learn from one another. And I believe in sharing knowledge. And when I give talks to different groups and associations, I give out the PDFs and I say, use them, share them, but please just give credit to me that this material has come from Sharon Knight. I don't mind people using my material, because otherwise, how else is it going to be kept out there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And where would you like to see the astrological community go? Like, I'm pretty sure over there abroad, would you like it to see it expand? Would you like it to see the astrologers over there come together, maybe, you know, stay united?
I hate what's gone on recently over the house system. I think it's utterly, utterly appalling. It's caused division. It's caused friends to break off friendships. And for what? You know, for what? So I just want all astrologers to support one another and to recognize that karmic astrology, esoteric astrology, asteroid astrology, we're all ultimately trying to help other people through a symbolic language, through using the heavens. It's in the Bible. He put the planets in the heavens to guide us. And I do have a very strong faith and belief in God. And I think if we're given the key to this divine knowledge, then it is up to us to help others and to do it in a gracious way and to expose people to the divine that has made this wonderful earth.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%. Those of you that are listening, all of Sharon Knight's information of how to contact her, how to sign up for her course, how to sign up for her newsletter, all of that will be in the description of the podcast. Definitely stay connected to her. She is a wonderful astrologer. a lot of us here in the United States, she's on our list. You know, when we talk about astrologers who are great, you know, Sharon Knight is definitely on our list. So we definitely are excited and we're honored that she took the time out of her busy schedule to sit down with us and talk about her legacy, about what she's doing. And we're going to stay connected because we're going to be following her. And we're going to be pushing her to, you know, even greater depths of putting more light on her so that she can encompass more followers, more clients, and also allow more people to see her greatness and give her the opportunity to use her gift that she's been given. I believe every astrologer, no matter who you study with, no matter how long you study, everybody has a unique gift within them. And when you get a reading, when you get a consultation, when you study with them, you get something different than you get from everybody else. Of course, me, I've been in studying this for over 20 years plus, and I've know that there's something different about you than everybody else. You have a different aura, you have a different energy that I love, and you're very embraceable. Like, we're able to embrace you, but I feel that your uniqueness, your energy, your knowledge, your wisdom, and the way that you are setting forth to do your astrology, I think that it's phenomenal, and I think that it should be recognized, it should be celebrated, and so we look forward to seeing you continue in your journey of success, and like I said, we'll hopefully see each other soon. Because we're going to be, you know, going to conferences in London and overseas and so forth. And we'll definitely be signing up and being part of your classes. And is what I wanted to ask you, too, is there a book coming? Are you going to write a book?
One day, yes. Actually, Ona has commissioned me to write a book. I'm not going to say about what, which I'm hoping to get down to this year. I come into a seventh house perfected year. And the angles echo my natal chart angles. So I think this coming year should be quite productive. But I just want to say I'm also the tutor and convener on the original QHP course for Barbara Dunn. That's a qualified horary practitioner, not, as someone said, what does QHP stand for? Is it quite hot property, Sharon? So it's a qualified horary practitioner. I teach I'm tutor on that course as well. So, definitely
horary is one of the best forms of astrology. It is magnificent. It's wonderful. So we will definitely make a note of that. And I think that And also, now let me ask you a question real quick. Do you, within your astrological practice and teachings, is there a space or anywhere in there that you teach herbalism?
No, I don't teach herbalism because I'm not a medically qualified herbalist. Now, in the UK, we have the most divine, wonderful Marcus Pratchett. And I think he's a nocturnal herbalist. So he is a medically qualified herbalist and the most phenomenal astrologer. So I would not dare to presume to teach herbalism with such a wonderful chap around who is more than capable and has far more medical knowledge than I do. So now what I do with my astrology, if people come to me with health issues, I will make suggestions and get them to do their own research. But I can suggest, like for most people, emotions cause disease, I've mentioned earlier, and the liver is the seat of emotions in traditional Chinese medicine. So I say to people, support your liver, look after your liver. And one of the good herbs for liver support is milk thistle. So, and in Germany, people with liver issues, say like cirrhosis, milk thistle is given as a matter of course. It's a well-known, respected natural herb. For people who suffer from sadness, St. John's wort, it's a herb of the sun. It's not got any contraindications. So take some St. John's wort. I don't know what it is called in America, and I can't think of the Latin name offhand. I do not give out any medical herbal training, but you can't go wrong with a cup of Culpeper. And in fact, just very quickly, 25, 30 years ago, I bought a house in a village only because it was where Culpeper grew up in the 1600s. And my house, that particular house then, was built in the late 1500s. And it was more than likely Culpeper trod its boards or its dirt floors, as they would have been in those days. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, yeah, it's called St. John's Wort here, too. I know that you probably, like you said, you're not medically certified to teach that. But I think that, you know, at some point, you know, I think with your knowledge, I think that that's a great, great asset to anybody who encounters you, that you have the ability to let them know on a personal level, these are some of the herbs that I may use, and this is what I use them for, and this is how they help me to heal me. Because I think that herbalism is phenomenal. Think that using the herbs and really getting into herbs and studying, are they male and female? Are they, and really aligning yourself with the herbs and how to use them. And I think that that's a benefit, actual great benefit to have. So I'm glad that you have that knowledge, and you've given us a little bit of some of the secrets here with milk thistle and St. John's wort and the Culpeper and so forth. So those listeners can, you know, if you do have those issues, which seem to be issues all across the world with the liver. So I think that that's something that we all need to look into.
Yeah, yeah. But it's you're a life coach. It's coaching people to open their eyes to the wonder of nature, all the plants and trees that are around us. They're there for a reason. They're there to look after us. If we look after them, they'll look after us.
Exactly. So we're here today with the great Sharon Knight. We want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit down with us. We're going to be promoting this everywhere. This is going to be on Apple. It's going to be on Spotify. It's going to be on iHeartRadio. We're going to also put it on YouTube. We're going to put it on all social media, Facebook. So like I said, you can look in the description to find out how to stay connected to Sharon Knight. As we move into this world of many changes, many events, many things that are happening, she's one of the astrologers that we definitely want to stay connected to. I also respect her work, her research, everything that she has contributed to astrology. And I think that she needs to be recognized. She needs to be celebrated. And we want to let you know that we honor you, and we're going to be with you along the way.
Oh, bless you. Thank you, Shaka.
All right. So thank you so much for tuning in to this, the Astrological Commission podcast with Sharon Knight. Thank you once again, Sharon. We want to tell you this one thing, Sharon. We love you,
yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
All I try to do is make sure you love me more.
All right, thank you, and we'll speak to you soon.
God bless. Thank
God
you
bless.
Again.
All right.